What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Locked On Bills is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Our guest today on this podcast is Anthony Marino. You guys know him from the Breaking Buffalo Rumblings podcast. He also does written work over at BuffaloRumblings.com. You can follow him on Twitter at AnthMarino, A-N-T-H Marino, M-A-R-I-N-O. Anthony, thanks for joining me, and we're going to do the third episode of Buffalo Bills Word Association.
Joe, it's great to be on with you again, and I'm happy to be doing the Word Association podcast with you too. A couple of sleepless nights getting ready for this, but I think I've got a formidable list prepared for you.
Well, I couldn't imagine anything but sleepless nights trying to come up with the perfect six items to really spark some great reaction today. So appreciate your preparation, and this should be really fun. So if everyone, I don't know if you guys have caught the first two of these. Basically, I have six items I'm going to give Anthony. He has six that he's going to give me, and we have to give our immediate reaction and bring it back to the Buffalo Bills. What about the Buffalo Bills do we think about when this is said? So I don't know what Anthony has for me. I have three players and three words coming his way. So we will respond with the immediate thing that comes to our mind and have some little banter back and forth about whatever is going to be on the table here. So without further ado, sir, you can be the pitcher here to start. And I'm looking forward to this.
All right. First one up is certainly a topic of conversation as of the past couple of weeks. Sammy Watkins.
Man, oh, I love Sammy Watkins so much coming out of Clemson. I watched him play football at Clemson, and I thought he was special, like just really amazing ability after the catch and just a really dynamic alpha-type receiver with great speed. And then, like, I was immediately soured because that was so much to give up for him. And I bought into the belief that it was the best thing for EJ Manuel and for him to reach his ceiling. But at the end of the day, you know, it seems like Sean McDermott, it wasn't going to fit. And as more information came out through that Ty Dunn piece, you know, you could see why he's not a process guy. And he wasn't going to, you know, really fit into the culture that McDermott was putting on. But I still love his skill set, and I find myself still rooting for Sammy Watkins, even when he was on the Rams. I was happy for him that he won the Super Bowl with the Chiefs. I wish him continued success. I think he's matured. I really loved his skill set, but I think in hindsight, it's a big black eye on Buffalo Bills trade and draft history.
You know, Joe, I vaguely remember back, right, to when the Bills did not pick up his fifth-year option. And I remember being upset as a fan at that time, right, because you think of what the team paid to move up and to acquire him in the draft. And at that point, and now when you read this article, right, not to say that hindsight is 2020 or any of these pieces, but you look at it and you think to yourself, okay, yeah, maybe he wasn't a process guy or there were some other demons that he was certainly going against. But I remember back to when they passed on that fifth-year option, and I just was shocked at the time.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to sometimes it's from the outside looking in, we can often go back to like buzzy phrases like, well, they know him best, right? Well, they're around him every day. They know what the right thing to do is. But then NFL teams make a lot of mistakes, so that's not always the right thing to say. But it did feel like, you know, he had some really dynamic moments with the team, and he had the injuries, and you just felt like if he could be healthy, he could be an elite receiver in the NFL. But obviously he wasn't quite there in terms of, I think, the way he was programmed to prepare and get ready for his job and be the best version of himself on Sundays. But he's had a lot of success. He's making a lot of money. He's created generational wealth for his family. So he's making it happen. But I don't think you can look back and say giving up two number one picks, a fourth round pick to move up, what, five spots in the first round to get a receiver, especially in that year, doesn't look good in retrospect.
I thought the tough thing with it, too, where when I say he got a bit of a raw deal, I mean, obviously he's not the one who orchestrated the trade, right? And I felt like there were always fans that almost took it out on him as opposed to, you know, Doug Whaley and the management that made the move. But there was at least the rumor or speculation after the fact that you know, Whaley did not want to include the second round pick in that year's draft and instead opted to include the first round pick in the following year because he felt like it was going to be a, you know, a high pick in or a low pick, I guess you could say, in the first round. And, you know, the Bills obviously used that second round pick to take Cyrus Kwanjo, and you know how that story ends. So, all right. Sorry. All right. Let's move on. Let's move on to the next topic for you. Terrell Owens.
Oh man, I loved it. I thought that was one of my favorite moments in Bills history when they signed Terrell Owens. You know, in Bills history, as I was kind of like in my teenage adult years, like not just being like 6, 7, 8, 9 years old when the Super Bowl years were happening, I was pumped, man. I went out. I got it was the same year they released the white throwback jerseys. I said the first thing I got to do is get a Terrell Owens white throwback jersey, and I did. And I immediately I went to the Bills team store at Ralph Wilson Stadium at the time, and I put that jersey on and I took pictures outside of it. Man, I was so pumped. That was like probably the one transaction that the Bills made. Like in my real, like, I don't know, like, I don't want to say that I'm not like a big time fan, but like you're youthful fan years where you're just like hyped about something. And that was that move for me. I didn't care that he was like outside of his prime. It was the coolest thing in the world to me that T.O. was a Bill.
No, that's, you know what? And it's interesting to hear that response from you, because I really, truly was not sure what you were going to say to this. Right. And you look back at it, and when, right, the Bills signed Terrell Owens, it was before Twitter was around, and whenever we would get all this instant analysis of everything that took place. And it was interesting because I remember looking at it, and you know, Owens sort of had a bit of that villain role, right? Mm-hmm. For everything that he had been in the past, going to the Star in Dallas, just being one of those players that could really just, again, right? He was probably even a little bit ahead of his time as far as that, for lack of a better term, the diva mentality that we put on wide receivers. But when he signed with the Bills, I mean, it was always interesting because, again, right, you did not have great quarterback play at the time. And you think to yourself, okay, for what he was able to do with J.P. Lossman, what could Terrell Owens have been in Buffalo with, you know, thinking earlier to Drew Bledsoe or just, again, with more competent quarterback play? But just I would have loved to have seen a young Joe Marino standing outside the Bills store getting his picture taken.
Brother, there are pictures to be seen. So
okay,
they exist, man. I still got them. I was pumped. I really was.
Well, and it's great when you get excited about a free agent signing. So my next name for you is another free agent signing that was for the Bills. Mario Williams.
I remember being so caught up in, I don't know, like, I don't want to take this to a weird place, but do you remember how you just, when the election was going on between George Bush and Al Gore and like the counting ballots in Florida, and you were just kind of like on pins and needles waiting to find out, no matter what you supported or wanted to happen, there was still that element of what is going to happen here. I remember like a similar feeling to that whenever Mario Williams was like held hostage by the Bills and like trying to find the play-by-play on where he's at, and like his girlfriend was coming to town or something. We're like, if the girlfriend's there, like we got a real chance at this. And I wanted it to happen. I think through the discussion that Bruce Nolan and I had last week about pass rush versus coverage, people can understand that I'm a pass rush guy. And this was really exciting because I you know, I was really high on Aaron Schobel. Bruce Smith's my favorite Bill of all time. I was like, all right, I'm going to get my next guy, right? I had Marcellus Wiley for like a minute, and that was such a tease. But then there was no dynamic pass rusher like this. So I was on pins and needles waiting for that to come through. I didn't care what it took to pay him. It felt like a big, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, so many narratives were heavy about how free agents wouldn't want to go to Buffalo and those types of things. And I'm like, if the Bills can get Mario Williams, it's going to start changing that. So I was hyped, not T.O. hyped, but I was hyped.
Now, see, for me, I was, I guess I would call your version of T.O. hyped around Mario Williams, right? And now, granted, I didn't run out and buy a jersey. And I think there were a couple T-shirts that maybe, you know, one of the locals, they do. It was a Super Mario T-shirt, right? And for me, it was just like, oh, I think I ordered that about 15 seconds after it was available on the site. But remember looking at it, right, and thinking this guy is the missing piece to the defense, right? You would look at the Bills' defensive line, and you know, and even as you you think back, good gosh, like the going to the Pro Bowl where you've got Kyle Williams, Marcell Dareus, and Mario Williams, and you could have even made a case that Jerry Hughes should have made it as well. You know, you're thinking to yourself, okay, you know, and what happens as Bills fans? We don't have everything figured out at quarterback, so let's try and make everything else great. But I was listening to WGR nonstop during that stretch. Luke Russert is calling in and giving updates that his mother saw Mario Williams at some hotel downtown when there was speculation that he had already left town. Like, it was something else when you talk about that coverage and being on pins and needles. And I think for a lot of fans, right, like you look back, I mean, that was before the 2012 season. I mean, just when you think of like the early stages of Twitter, right, of just like getting updates nonstop and it really being one of those pieces where all of a sudden it becomes, oh, I need every update, every piece of information. I really felt like that was a shift in the way, at least for me personally, that I consumed information on the team.
He had a good stretch with the Bills, too. I think in four seasons, he averaged double-digit sacks. I mean, he was a good player for Buffalo. That last year, trying to sort things out in Rex Ryan's defense, where Rex just didn't have a clue what to do, was disappointing. But his first three seasons were really high-quality football. So,
and it was so interesting, too, because then once he got done with Rex and he moved over to Miami, and but that was really it. Like, then he really was never heard of again. And it just was surprising because when you saw him as such a specimen, not to say I expected more from when he was with the Bills, but just I didn't expect his career to be over that soon after he left Buffalo.
And he had some, I think he had some legal stuff recently. I don't remember what they off the top of my head, but I thought he had some type of a situation where you're like, wow, I can't believe this is where he's at. So, all right, you're on the hot seat now, sir. Time for you to give those immediate reactions. The first one, we'll start with a player for you. And that player is Alex Van Pelt.
Oh my gosh, Alex Van Pelt. You know what? That is such an interesting one, Joe, because you look at him and it's sort of one of those, I'll say like a folk hero for the Bills. And in many ways, right, you look back at it and you think of a time when Frank Reich, you equate it to Frank Reich and the popularity that Frank Reich had as the backup quarterback for the Bills. And I think for fans, it just became that piece where, you know, here is a guy in a position that always just became a bit of a, you know, there was excitement around a backup quarterback, right? Uh-huh. Because you had somebody in place. So for me, as you think of Van Pelt, I mean, gosh, that's the first thing that comes to mind, right? Like, there's nothing specific that I remember of, oh, on the field or anything along those lines. But just as you look at it from his time in Buffalo, it was just one of those where you're just like, hey, you know, Alex Van Pelt, if anything happens here, here's a guy that, you know, the Bills can turn to. And I don't know why there was ever that sort of confidence. I mean, he was certainly in Buffalo for enough years. But gosh, that's what first came to mind for me when you think of Alex Van Pelt.
Yeah, he was pretty popular. And like, it's not like he did anything. Like you said, like he played, he's had 11 starts across 8 seasons, 3-8 in those starts, you know, 16 touchdowns, 24 interceptions. I mean, not like a ton of success, but that popularity existed. I'll tell you, you know, I live in Carolina, Charlotte area, and I've lived through the Cam Newton era in Charlotte. And there was this unfound love for Derek Anderson that just always seemed to exist. And it's like, I don't know why, I don't know where it comes from, but there's people that would tell you that they should have played Derek Anderson instead of Cam Newton. But Van Pelt was definitely, I think when you go from the Frank Reich as the primary backup to Alex Van Pelt, it's just, for whatever reason, there's that, like, there's been that inspiring hope, whoever the Bills backup quarterback has been. Fun fact with Alex Van Pelt, he's the offensive coordinator right now for the Cleveland Browns. So there you go. Baker Mayfield's OC. Your next one,
sir. He's got his hands full.
He does. Well, you know, that's the thing about Van Pelt. The guy's been coaching since 2005. You know, this is going to be his, he was the offensive coordinator for the Bills for that like one season. And then he's been a quarterback's coach and now he's getting a chance to be an OC again. So see how he goes. He's got plenty of talent to work with there in Cleveland. Much better offensive line now. All right, your second one is just a word. Overhyped.
Overhyped. has to be Bills related.
Well, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Baker Mayfield. And okay. Maybe it's because we were just talking about the Cleveland Browns, right? Yeah. But I think as we went through all of this, and it's hard, right? I can make this Bills specific because when you talk about that quarterback class, right? Mayfield, Darnold, Allen, Lamar Jackson, and now I guess to a lesser extent, Josh Rosen, you know, there's always going to be this comparison between all of these guys. And certainly early on when the Bills were going to be picking at number 11 and they had, you know, made the trade up with the Bengals, things were so up in the air. I was thinking to myself, man, could Baker Mayfield end up being the quarterback of the Bills? Like, I seriously thought that at some point that, you know, he doesn't have the ideal size, this and that. There's still some questions. There really wasn't the thought that he was going to go number one overall until what seemed like, right, just a few days before the draft. And all of a sudden that became a reality. And for me, I don't say it in any way of like that I don't think he can be a successful NFL quarterback, but it's just the whole aura around him, right? And I, you know, in some ways, like when you talk about, you know, some talking heads and radio and things like that, but I don't know. I just think when you look at the season that he had last year, coming off the successful rookie season, it's one of those where we've seen guys have a good year and then really take a hard hit. And, you know, for him, it was just the level of hype, the commercials being on every single break during every NFL game. To me, it was just like, and I'm not one of these guys, right? I don't hate on athletes. I don't, you know, hold that type of grudge, I guess you could say, against players. But for me, that was the first name that came to mind as you said it. And again, when you talk about that quarterback class and just how much he is talked about and discussed, that's what jumped to mind for me.
Yeah, well, I think some of the discussion about Baker that stemmed from his altercation with the police, really, and obviously his antics. He's a Heisman Trophy winner, undersized. There was just a lot of like darts that you could throw at him, and it felt like he had a lot of apologists and defenders along the way. And I mean, at the end of the day, he had a really good season, and he had a really good skill set, and that he was definitely polarizing. And I think whenever that happens, you get like a whatever side of it you're on, you get this like chip on your shoulder about defending your guy. All right. And so it started off so good. And then, you know, they hand the keys of the car over to Freddie Kitchens, who's a really sloppy coach, and they just didn't get the offensive line right. And that's like, okay, now the other side of the equation gets to kind of like stick out their chest. So a big year for him, obviously, in year three to figure out, you know, who he's going to be in the NFL.
Yeah. And I don't even like when, you know, the opportunity to say, oh, like, you know, it's not I gotcha. I told you he wasn't going to be good, this and that. Like, you know, honestly, when I look at the Browns, the Jets and the Bills, especially, and I know this might not be a popular take, like all three of these franchises deserve to find their quarterback. Right. Mm-hmm. And I hope Baker Mayfield can be a guy that can play for them for a decade. The same thing with Sam Darnold and obviously with Josh Allen. I mean, I hope that Josh is the best of the three. But, you know, as you look at those franchises, what those fan bases have gone through, you know, hey, they deserve to have some competent quarterback play for some time. So, you know, as I say it, I just need the whole narrative around him to just kind of tone down a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, it's been loud, if nothing else.
Yes.
All right, last one before you're off the hook here is primetime games.
Overhyped. So it kind of along the lines of as you go through with it, I understand everyone gets excited about it. I mean, as you look at the slate, it's just like, hey, it's great that the Bills are getting, let's call it that respect, I guess, that so many fans clamor for. But for me, you know, when you look and say, okay, four primetime games, possibly even a fifth when you talk about that late season matchup with the Broncos, is it nice? Sure, right? Like, I mean, but the Bills could be playing the Kansas City Chiefs at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday, and I would be hyped and excited for that game. It has nothing to do with when the game is being played or anything along those lines. So, you know, hey, is it nice? Sure it is. But, you know, along those same lines, I don't put too much stock in the primetime games over anything else.
Anthony, I'm in trouble with these primetime games because with this newborn baby, she's 4 months old now, I've been going to sleep about 9:30 at night, knowing that there's going to be wake ups and things I got to deal with. So I'm going to tell you, as somebody who's very much a creature of habit and routine, I'm going to be in trouble when these games are kicking off at 8:30 and I got to stay up till midnight. You know, I am far from regular season mode right now. Let me just tell you that.
I wish you the best of luck there, Joe.
Let me tell you guys about Built Bar real quick here before we continue. This is the best tasting protein bar that I've ever had. I've been hyping them up for weeks here on this podcast. You got to try them for yourself. It's hard to explain just how good they are. They have the taste and consistency of a candy bar, but they're extremely good for you. They're all made with 100% real chocolate, and the nutrition facts are just off the charts with these things. It's an amazing combination of low calorie, high protein, low sugar. There's no crazy additives. You compare them to other popular protein bars, it's literally half the calories, 7 times fewer carbs, 7 times fewer sugar grams, and more protein. It doesn't make sense how it could be that good for you and taste that good. I absolutely love the flavor variety. You can get anything from peanut butter brownie and double chocolate to orange chocolate, raspberry chocolate, coconut almond. There's so much variety. You're not just going to get one box full of one flavor. It's you can mix it up and really create a new experience for yourself every day with the taste and consistency of a candy bar. Find out what the fuss is all about. Go to BuiltBar.com. You use our promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. Again, BuiltBar.com, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order. All right, Anthony, I'm back on the hot seat for the final three.
All right, the final three. And I have more, I guess, phrases for you than words. So just bear with me with these. But New Era Field should be converted to a dome.
I feel like people are really different on this, but I'll tell you what, I really struggle in the cold now. I really do. It would make me more likely to go to a football game in December or late November in Buffalo. It would. So I know that there's so much that goes into it in terms of paying for that. And, you know, that's a debate for another time, but from the simple principle of it, like I know that outdoor games in Western New York late in the season, that you feel like that's a home field advantage. But from a consumer perspective, I don't want anything to do with it in terms of sitting out there in those temperatures. I've not lived in Buffalo since the mid 90s, but whenever I am up north and it's cold, I struggle, man. I really, really struggle. And I don't like it to be super hot. So I'm very much picky when it comes to the ideal temperature, but I literally just can't make it out there in the cold anymore. So a climate controlled environment would make it more likely for me to go to games. And I think that's probably true for a lot of people. And if you like the cold weather games, you're still going to go. So it seems like it might be a net positive for that to happen.
Well, and I've always felt that, and I understand when people say, oh, you lose that home field advantage, this or that. But, you know, I look at the Minnesota Vikings, the atmosphere that they have at their home games. I mean, it's a cold weather city. Obviously they don't, you know, they don't need the elements to have that advantage, right? I think every team, if you have a passionate fan base, you have that home field advantage. And I think when you talk about things like season tickets and marketing, but not just marketing to fans, but let's even say marketing to free agents and, you know, maybe some of just the appeal of individuals coming to the team. Now, I think, you know, winning cures a lot of that, but, you know, I fall certainly in the, you know, whether it's building a dome or converting it to a dome or whatever it is, but I was curious to get your take on that one.
It feels like every year, my big cold weather experience, people are going to laugh at me for saying this, but that's fine. That's just what's been fun about these word association. It allows us to be a little more candid and we just talk openly about stuff. I don't go up north very often when it's cold, but one trip that I do make every year in February is to Indianapolis for the NFL scouting combine. And I understand that's not Western New York. That's not the coldest place on earth, but it's usually pretty cold. You know, I've been in there and it's been like in the single digits with the wind chill and those types of things with some pretty fierce winds. And dude, like when I'm walking around outside, like from, you know, building to building or from the car to a building and that wind gets going, I just describe that feeling like there's somebody's taking like a vegetable peeler and just running it across my face because it just bites that hard. And I'm just like, I used to go to Bills game late in the season all the time. Me and my brother, when we were in college And, you know, the semester was over in December. We try to go to one game a year. It was always in December. I did it for, I don't know, I'd guess 7-8 years in a row doing that because my brother was like ahead of me. So like when I was in high school, he was in college. And then throughout my college time, you know, it was about an 8-year stretch where we go every December for a game. I loved it. Never thought twice about it. I knew how to dress. It was great. I look forward to it every year, even though by that time the Bills were out of the playoff race. But now at this point in my life, I'm telling you, man, I don't think I can make it. My wife, I'll tell you this though. My wife, who is born and raised in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, she wants to go so bad. She wants to go to a snow game in December in Buffalo, like really bad. And I'm just like, I don't think you know what you're getting into. But I guess I'll have to make that happen for her.
You'll have to figure it out at some point. All right, let me move on to the.
Maybe I can send her on with somebody else. I'll get a suite, yeah. Put her on the elements. Yeah.
There you go. All right, the next one for you, it is not specific to the Buffalo Bills, but as I say it, I think you'll understand why I'm asking. Joe Flacco signs with the New York Jets.
Yeah, you know I'm jealous of that. I can't believe I'm saying it. I just feel like what a great move to upgrade your backup quarterback situation where you previously had David Fales kind of in the running to be that spot. Not that Joe Flacco is going to come in and unseat Sam Darnold, but you feel like your season has a chance to stay afloat if things are going well and Sam Darnold goes down. And I've talked about my concern, like Josh Allen goes down. I love Matt Barkley for what he means to Josh Allen, but I don't like what he means to the offense if he has to play for an extended period of time. He just doesn't have the dynamic physical traits to be a big-time playmaker and carry the offense and in big moments really make it happen. And so I think investing in the backup quarterback position is smart. And I think the Jets did a good move there to bring in Flacco to keep things afloat, you know, if Darnold goes down.
But do you think that is right when you have a coach like Adam Gase, who's on the proverbial hot seat? And do you think that maybe the narrative around Flacco, right? If let's say if the Jets signed Andy Dalton, you'd think to yourself, hey, here's a guy, he's, you know, he fits that good guy narrative that could mentor a young quarterback and help him along, similar to like a Josh McCown or whatever that may be, where Flacco does not seem to have that same, at least reputation, as being, you know, serving as the mentor, which I think it has me scratching my head a little bit more. I understand what you're saying, upgrading the quarterback room and that backup position. But just as you look at it and thinking, is Adam Gase the best guy and is Joe Flacco the best guy?
You know, I think you have to look at Joe Flacco, and at this point in his career, he's in his late 30s. He's on his third team in as many years. He was replaced by the franchise where he had his success with. I think he's got to look at himself honestly and say, okay, who am I in the NFL? I'm not anyone's desired starter. It's May. I just signed a very modest deal to go be a backup. I think it's probably that point in his life, if he wants to continue to be part of the NFL as a player, that this is the type of role that he has to embrace. And I would hope, if I'm a Jets fan, that that's exactly the case, because if Joe Flacco's coming in because he thinks he's going to like become the next face of the New York Jets, I just don't think that's realistic at all. And I think he's going to have to rewire himself. And part of that is this opportunity. He knows what he's paid. He knows what his role is. His role is to obviously be the backup, but you know, being a great teammate will create more opportunities for him to continue being in the NFL. Obviously it's not about money. The dude's made all the money he could ever need in his life. He wants to continue being part of things. And if he wants to do that, this is the role he's going to have to embrace.
All right, Joe, last one that I have for you. The Bills should never have cut Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong about that. Are you saying you agree with that?
I agree. I agree with it.
Yeah, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick, since he's walked into the NFL, has been worthy of being a starting quarterback. I'll say this about the teams that the Bills built around Fitzpatrick, where they're very poor in terms of talent. So I know that Fitz is not necessarily always going to be, you're not going to win because Fitz is your quarterback, but you can, he'll have his moments. But I think that I would have liked to seen him on some of those teams later that Rex Ryan got, as from a talent perspective, instead of the ones that he was handed, very poor offensive line, underwhelming weapons, defense not really up to speed. Yeah, I think that on a better roster, the Bills could have had more success. I think they could have went to the playoffs a couple of times at least, you know, instead of never getting there. So Fitz has always deserved to be a starter in the NFL, and you have to live with the ups and downs of that. But yeah, it feels like he shouldn't have played for as many teams as he has, and he still should be in the NFL. I agree with that.
It's easy to romanticize as a Bills fan about Ryan Fitzpatrick, right? But I think as you look at it, they signed him to a 6-year deal. After two seasons, they released him. He beat the Patriots, and I realize we hold that on a higher pedestal than we probably should, right? At the Ralph, with his primary offensive weapons were Stevie Johnson, Donald Jones, David Nelson, Fred Jackson, and Scott Chandler. And when you think about that, right, kind of just the success that he had with the lack of, let's just call it blue chip talent, right? And again, the love mm-hmm. people have for Freddie Jackson and Stevie Johnson and all this. But I mean, no one that was a first round pick, a second round pick, even a third round pick. And for them to be able to do offensively what they could have, and then to release him, to sign Kevin Cobb, and to draft EJ Manuel, you could have just kept Fitzpatrick. You still could have drafted EJ, given him the time or whatever it would have been, right, to try and win the job or whatever it. And I realize it would have gotten a little bit sticky, but I think when you look back at it with a rational train of thought, and again, not just loving Fitz because of the beard and he's kind of crazy and all this type of stuff, but like they never should have let him go.
Yeah, for sure. I think the drought would have ended sooner, but I think we're happy where we are now. But yeah, I think, man. Yeah, he deserved a better fate in Buffalo. All right, you're back on the hot seat for the last three here, sir. First one is a player, and his name is Jairus Byrd.
Jairus Byrd. You know what? That is one of those interesting ones, and it's funny. For some reason, I thought you were going to bring up Jairus Byrd today. And
really?
The first thing that comes up is just conflicted, right? And that was one of those first times as a fan. Again, you feel conflicted. And that here's a guy that he's holding out, that he wants the contract that he feels that he deserves. And maybe he does, right? But like as a teammate, it's always that piece. And you talk about it as being a business, but like the holdout went for too long, right? And when you stay out that long and you sacrifice your personal gain for that of the team, that was a part where I felt really conflicted. And, you know, you can look at things now and you say, good gosh, why would I side with, you know, an owner who's worth billions of dollars versus this player who has a shorter window to be in the field? But, you know, with that said, when it prolonged as long as it did, right, and you always go back to it. I mean, I never knew who Eugene Parker was as far as his agent goes, right? And all of a sudden, this guy became the, you know, driving the hard bargain, hard line, whatever it was. And you just felt like, you know, the team is suffering because of this now. And it's like, I'm certainly not siding with the ownership, but along those lines, the other guys that are on the field with you. And it was really that first time where you looked at it that I felt conflicted about, you know, what I thought a player should be doing, but not siding with the owners. And even as I look back at it today, right, you can say to yourself, what was the right thing to do there?
Well, I will say, as long as that drug out, the Bills got the best years of Jairus Byrd, and he got 3 Pro Bowls in 5 seasons with the team. He went on and went to the Saints for 3 seasons and was hurt the first year and made a modest impact. And then he had, you know, 12 games as a backup with the Panthers in 2017. I mean, the Bills got the best out of him, and they'd never really had to pay him that massive payday like the Saints did. But yeah, that was a stretch there in Bills history where it felt like whatever high profile player that they would get, just like there was just so many complications with keeping them, and it's nice to be out of that era.
No, absolutely. I mean, kind of as we said before, right, when we talked about Fitz and Fred Jackson and all these underdog types, but, you know, here we were, and, you know, with someone like Byrd that just, man, what a great hit this was. His father played for the franchise. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just thinking everything would align, and just, of course, did not end the way that you would have wanted it to.
All right, next one for you is Draft Steel.
Draft Steel, Matt Milano, first name that comes to mind, right? And you go through all of that, a fifth-round pick. Here he is now, what I would imagine, on the verge of signing a contract extension with the Bills, at least, you know, when Brandon Bean has been asked about it. He's been pretty open in talking about Milano and Deion Dawkins that, You know, that's usually something that we do after the draft. You know, in no way has it sounded like, you know, here's a guy that they would not have intentions of signing to an extension. He just stands out, right? I mean, here is a guy when he is on the field makes such a difference for the Bills. And to get him as a fifth round pick out of Boston College, someone going into the draft had no idea who he was, right? So here you are. Mm-hmm. Okay, fifth round pick, linebacker, Boston College. Bills need help at linebacker. Let me read up on him a little bit. You know, as most fans do. Yeah, he sounds pretty good. All right, Matt Milano. Let's see what this guy can do. You know, here's a guy that is, you know, NFL experts. I remember Chris Wessling from Around the NFL podcast, you know, just sort of touting him where when you listen to a national show and here's a respected host and they are singling out Matt Milano as someone that they feel should be going to the Pro Bowl, that's such a different narrative, right, than when you talk about the Bills and, you know, guys that might be the high-profile draft picks that get a lot of recognition. Matt Milano has certainly, you know, created a name and a reputation for himself, albeit a draft steal and a guy with a pretty quiet personality.
Would you pay him? So let's say Matt Milano, who's a free agent after this year, let's say that he's worth the same deal as Shaq Thompson, who signed a 4-year, $54 million deal with the Panthers in December. You going to pay him that?
So that's the piece where, and early on at BuffaloRumblings.com, I looked at it and my initial thought was, okay, Matt Milano, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 million per year. Now that was off the top of my head, right? Mm-hmm. Then you start to look at some of the statistics that are out there or other contracts, I guess you could say, right? You bring up a Shaq Thompson. That's probably a little rich for my blood. Along the same lines, I'm a fan first, right? So it's always like, hey, it's not my money. What difference mm-hmm. does it make? I would think someone like Milano, I'm thinking, right, 4 years, $50 million, somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe, right? Or, you know, realizing $10 million a year is probably a little bit too low. If you're getting up to 14, that's probably a bit too high. So, you know, if you have to split the difference, I mean, we've seen what the Bills have looked like when he's not on the field. Yeah. And that's not something I'm fond of. So I'm okay with them paying him somewhere in between those two numbers.
It's going to be challenging. This is the Bills have had enjoyed so many really good players, and they're on rookie deals, and they're not on rookie deals anymore. And the amount of money you're going to pay for Deion Dawkins and Matt Milano in 2021 versus 2020 is just astronomical. And things get a little bit more challenging here for Brandon Bean. So I'll
show you what you want. You want a hot take from me?
Of course I do.
The Bills will extend Matt Milano before they will Deion Dawkins.
Really, your second fiddle linebacker versus your left tackle? That's team captain.
I'm telling you, that's just my gut feeling, and I think when you look at it, you know, the number of tackles that come out in the draft each year, you just kind of look at that piece. I think Sean McDermott and his defense values those linebackers above everything else, and I think when you look at what they did to acquire Tremaine Edmonds, obviously moving up in the draft to select him. I mean, playing him every single snap, playing Matt Milano every single snap. Those are the guys that really make things work for him. Again, I'm just talking in my opinion. I think if he were prioritizing the two, he's got Milano ahead of Deion Dawkins.
I mean, Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly were a thing. You get Matt Milano out of the building, and it's a big question mark alongside Tremaine Edmonds. So, all right, that'll be fun to let me think about here for the rest of the day. I'll have some thoughts on that very soon as I go deeper in thought on that. Okay, last one here today. It's a player, and his name is Takiyo Spikes.
Takiyo Spikes. So that is another one. You talk about the excitement. Just excitement, right? That's the first word that comes to mind. When he signed with the Bills, and I remember it's just like, this is a guy, he is high profile. You see him on the national sports talk shows. He is a personality, and this is a guy that plays, that brings, swagger wasn't really a word back then, but brought a swagger to the Buffalo Bills. And man, again, you just talk about an excitement, right? That came with a player joining the team. I mean, Takiyo Spikes, and I remember just thinking back to that. I mean, here was a guy that just, again, he brought a level of excitement from me as a fan, but just a level of kind of swagger. I can't think of another word really coming to the top of my head, right? When he came over to Buffalo from Cincinnati. And with that, I realized the teams didn't have the most success in the years that he was there. But I mean, when he burst on the scene with the Bills, I was excited to have him coming to Buffalo.
Two Pro Bowl seasons with the Bills. I wish his tenure was longer. He wound up after the Bills. Did they release him or trade him? It was after, I think he had an injury-filled final season. No, he came back and started 12 games. And then he went to the Eagles for like one season. After his final games with Buffalo in 2006, he started for six more years in the league. He played alongside Patrick Willis with the 49ers for several seasons. But I was pumped when they got him. 4 years, $32 million. That was so much money for a linebacker back in, 2003?
2003, just pulled it up. And you look, you know, and you think back to that time, right? We were still in that point of as fans, like the term the drought meant nothing to us, right? And it was just a matter of, okay, you know what? You're down for a couple of years. That's all right. Bouncing back. Here we go. Drew Bledsoe, whatever it's going to be. Takeo Spikes coming to Buffalo. Like, you know, this is the Buffalo Bills. They're going to be back on top in no time. And, but man, there was an excitement with him. I mean, I remember, again, he used to be on Fox Sports all the time, I think it was. And just, he was a guest and he would come in and just, again, it was a face of the franchise type defender. And man, I was so excited when he joined the Bills.
Correction, it was 6 years, $32 million. Send that over to Matt Milano. See if he takes that. See if he takes that. Anthony, you've been a terrific guest. I hope you didn't lose too much sleep over coming up with those great talking points, but I appreciate your time here and all the insight you brought.
No, it's always great to catch up and appreciate everything you do for Bills fans. It's great to listen to Locked On Bills, and thanks for having me on.
All right, guys, it's Anthony Marino. You can catch his podcast, Breaking Buffalo Rumblings, over on the Buffalo Rumblings podcast feed. It's where you can find the Nick and Nolan Show, so make sure you're checking out his work there, in addition to the written content for Buffalo Rumblings. That's going to do it for us today here on this podcast. As always, I kindly ask that you share, subscribe, rate, and review, and I'll be back again for you tomorrow.